Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with the Reverend Dr. Kenyatta R. Gilbert about the Black prophetic experience. And today, we are going to talk more about that, and we're going to focus somewhat on his latest book, Exodus Preaching. It is the first of its kind. It's an exploration of the African-American prophetic rhetorical traditions in a manner that makes features of these traditions relevant to the broad audience beyond the African-American traditions. And it provides us a composite picture of the nature, meaning, and relevance of prophetic preaching as spoken word of justice and hope in a society of growing pluralism and the world-shaping phenomenon of racial, economic, and cultural diversity. African-American preachers have distinctly invested great symbolic significance in the Exodus story, the messianic witness of Jesus, and the prophetic literature for developing and shaping prophetic sermons. Kenyatta Gilbert, our guest today, demonstrates how four distinctive features of discourse can shape sermon preparation for effective preaching in a period of intense social change, racial unrest, and violence. He includes dozens of practical suggestions and five practical exercises to equip us with for preaching in new ways and in new environments. He offers a holistic approach, fully equipping the reader with theological and practical resources needed to preach prophetically. A little bit about our guest. Dr. Gilbert earned his BA in political science from Baylor University and both his MDiv and PhD in practical theology from Princeton. Currently, he is an associate professor of homiletics at Howard University. Dr. Gilbert specializes in the history, theory, and practice of African-American preaching. His research focuses on the theology and rhetoric of prophetic teaching and preaching. African-American religion is also one of his favorite subjects, along with constructive practical theology. Besides Exodus Preaching, he's the author of The Journey and Promise of African-American Preaching and A Pursued Justice, Black Preaching from the Great Migration to Civil Rights. Dr. Gilbert is an ordained Baptist minister and founder of The Preaching Project, Restoring Communities Through the Spoken Word, a website that nurtures the preaching life of ministers serving Black churches and communities. He himself has served in congregations in Maryland, Texas, New York, New Jersey, and Kenya. So we welcome once again to Common Threads, Dr. Kenyatta Gilbert. Hello, Kenyatta.
Hello, thanks for having me again.
Certainly. Last week, we were having a great conversation, and just towards the end, I was asking you about your website, and I promised you that we would delve more into that today. So tell us, the name of your site is The Preaching Project, Restoring Communities Through Spoken Word, I am aware that it nurtures preaching life of ministers serving Black churches. Tell us just exactly how it does that.
It establishes a forum, and so what I seek to do with the Preaching Project is to chart a vision of a Christ-centered vision for 21st century preaching, where resources are housed to help clerical and scholarly collaboration. So I try to think collaboratively about what does it mean to promote preaching excellence and effective leadership to the end of supporting the wellness of African-American churches and communities. And so essentially the mission is to provide the theological and practical guidance that I find necessary to center or ground a project such as the Preaching Project and to kind of foster, you know, intergenerational dialogue in a community, a diverse community, where persons can discuss issues that relate to theology and religion and how that has implications for politics and how we live our lives socially. And so there's a good bit on the website that tries to connect conversations, interviews, some of my sermons, you know, even purchasing options for the Journey in Promise and Pursue Justice and my latest book. And so my hope for it is to ultimately kind of sprout from not just a website ministry, but the creation of a preaching institute of some sort where persons can come and be helped and resourced in their own preaching lives.
When people say the Black church, oftentimes, perhaps even unconsciously, they think of something that is monolithic, but clearly it isn't. You have a variety of denominations. And I'm wondering, speaking as someone who knows what goes on behind the scenes, is there any less fragmentation because of the challenges that are specific to the Black community? Is there less fragmentation? Is there less interdenominational and intra-denominational squabbling about theological points, etc., that you might find in the white Protestant church? Or is it just the same thing, in a different color?
Right. No, that's again another excellent question. I think Black people, by and large, are taught to read life racially, and that more or less has to do with connecting one's historical legacy to kind of the social oppression. And the birth of the Black church, per se, comes out of this reaction to being excluded from churches where they sought to become more assimilated to the white parent denominational institutions. And so you have as early as the 1700s when Richard Allen, who began as a Methodist minister within St. George's Methodist Church, to leave based on the racial discrimination within that congregation to begin the oldest African-American Protestant denomination, the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And from that point on, you see kind of this spawning of Black independent churches, not out of, again, not out of this sense of we want to separate ourselves, but over the notion of racism and classism and power, which also addresses the question that you really asked, and that is, you know, is there a monolithic Black church? And I would answer that question and say no. No, but there is this notion of honoring culture that is unique to the African in America. And by and large, those communities of faith that affirm certain cultural traditions long ago established by Africans kind of sit under that wide canopy. And so there's tremendous diversity within, but if one were not an astute observer, they could come away with, I think, kind of a stereotypical understanding of what they might perceive as the Black church.
You know what always fascinated me was the alliance that has been made over the decades, you know, going back to at least the late 50s, early 60s, between the Black church and the Black Muslim movement. So regardless of the two very disparate foundational theologies, people were very happy to work together towards the same goal.
Yes, I think that's true. I think, again, these are traditions that are connected based on this shared oral cultural tradition, as well as the lived experience of an oppressed people in this country. So whether that narrative is Judeo-Christian, or whether that narrative follows the other branch of Islam, there is still this component that liberation matters in both expressions of religious faith.
Talk about, if you will, the rise of the political preacher. People like Adam Clayton Powell, and how important that has been to the Black religious experience, religious and social experience.
Right, right. And so coming again, connecting this Black church reality and the formation of the Black preacher during the independent church movement, which subsequent to Richard Allen's departure and establishment of the African American Protestant denominations, you have this sense that there is a political element within the worship setting itself. This is where Black people organize. This is where community solidarity and religious ownership could be exercised in ways in which it could not in the wider society. So the role of the Black church was critical from that regard. And so so over time, beginning in the Reconstruction era, you start seeing this bivocationalism. So it would not be far-fetched to see a person who preached on Sundays weekly to be perhaps a school teacher on throughout the week, or some administrator of a university, and so that tie-in to spiritual life and social reform has always been a part of this prophetic tradition in Black churches.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Kenyatta Gilbert, and we're talking about the Black prophetic tradition. And I want to talk about your latest book for a bit, Exodus Preaching. You say that this is an exploration that you want to make more relevant to people, to a broader audience. So when you say a broader audience, do you mean people outside of the ministry? Do you mean people outside of the African-American community? A little bit of both.
I said a little bit of both, but specifically as I've seen, it's become more evident rather recently, just this kind of blatant hypocrisy within the church and how it professes faith in the world today. There is clearly a misalignment between faith expression of the white evangelical sort with that ties religion to God and guns, or greedy power, or this kind of privatization of religion, when in essence, this is antithetical, I believe, to the gospel or the religion of Jesus, where Jesus was concerned not just with legitimizing Roman authority, but also caring for those who were the most vulnerable in society. And so what Exodus preaching seeks to do is to call people back to this notion of liberation by highlighting the Exodus motif or the Exodus narrative, and to draw others' attention to the prophetic literature, where the Hebrew prophet's agenda was to speak truth to power, to establish power, or to disrupt the status quo, as persons kind of lost connection with the covenant, covenantal story of God, but also to see Christ not as just the crucified one, but as the incarnational Messiah who came to bring justice to the world, as well as to save. And when we simply relegate, for example, salvation to cross resurrection, then we miss out on a good bit of who Jesus was and is, and what it means to be discipled by a person who came to have the social agenda of salvation just as much as the atoning agenda.
Who are some of the great prophetic preachers today?
Well, again, there are several. Unfortunately, they're lesser known just for the reason that the black church has been little exposed outside of dreadful, again, caricature. So if one would think about the generation that precedes my own, the post-civil rights generation, one could just look at the preaching ministry of a Marvin McMichael or a Katie Cannon. Marvin McMichael currently is the president of Colgate Rochester Seminary. Katie Cannon is a womanist theologian at Union Seminary in Richmond. One can look at Otis Moss Jr., former pastor in Cleveland and civil rights icon. One could also look at persons in my generation. There are some rising leaders. Luke Towery is the first African-American dean of Duke University Chapel. And you look at that, the ministry of social ethicist Jonathan Walton, who leads the predominantly white university chapel congregation at Harvard. One could also point to Deborah Munford in Kentucky, who is a homiletics professor there, or Yale Divinity's professor Danielle McCray, or Union Theological Seminary's homiletics professor Lisa Thompson. And beyond the church, the work of an Otis Moss III, who is the successor to Jeremiah Wright at Trinity Church in Chicago. These are just several examples. Raquel Letson, who is hails from the African Methodist tradition. And they are Baptist persons, Cecil Duffy, who is a Howard alum, who has a pivotal role in leading the worship of Rankin Chapel at Howard University, which is the historic chapel and somewhat of a national pulpit where some of the most prominent and preeminent African-American religious leaders come weekly to deliver sermons. So there are people actively working.
It sounds like it. Let me ask you this, because you mentioned Reverend Wright. When President Obama distanced himself from Jeremiah Wright, what was your reaction?
It was a very emotional moment because I think both men were pigeonholed in ways in which were unfair to them. in the sense that President Obama had to appease his base as well as defend a person who in many ways influenced him spiritually, to create distance in order to do the politically expedient thing, really did a disservice to him, to Reverend Wright, who in many ways became this marginalized figure that was made to be, who was demonized in the society at large, largely because of his more strident critique of American society. Again, because of the nature, the more segregated nature of how black churches in America have had to subsist, if one were to look or to interlope, looking from the outside, one would not have a fully formed picture of what ministry looks like in African American churches. And so again, that debacle, media debacle, did not serve either of them well. And that's unfortunate.
It is, and certainly the opposition to Obama, they made a huge issue over three words of an incredible sermon. And of course, mm-hmm. all you have to do is play those three words on continuous loop, as what many in the right-wing media did, and you got yourself an issue to play with.
This is true, and this is the reality in which we live. We soundbite and segregate and distort reality.
Are there any particular denominations that are majority white that have been consistent allies to the greater black church over the decades, centuries?
Yeah, you know, that's really a loaded question for me. I think more mainline traditioned churches have tended to be a little more socially conscious and have in many ways tied social reform to equality and have done that very well. And I think there are some evangelical churches that have made attempts, but again, by and large, you think of the Roman Catholic Church as well as the Southern Baptist, for example, being the largest religious bodies in this nation, the minorities among those who I think are socially conscious get overshadowed by the noise that we hear in the larger institutional.
What I find interesting is that many of the white evangelical churches, and again, evangelical is a big, big word, but yeah, the ones that we normally think of when we think of the white evangelical church, theologically, they're a lot more attuned to the more conservative black churches, such as the Baptists and Assemblies of God, etc. And it is those churches, the white churches, who have a more progressive, liberal theology that tend to be your closer allies. I just find that fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It's very fascinating. And a lot of it is geopolitical. A lot of it has to do with geography. Where are you situated in the country? And by and large, as I've stated in the previous broadcast, before the turn of the century, 90% of the African American population lived in the South. And again, in the South during segregation, slavery, the opportunities to voice dissent were was rare. And so my work, Pursue Justice, focuses on the Great Migration period, which is kind of roughly between 1916 and 1940, where you had the largest internal migration on American soil, and you have this influx of persons going into these northern, or shaping these northern congregations, some of them kind of carrying the trait of preaching patience and humility as they had in the South, using, by and large, white evangelical methods that they had adopted. And part of my angst today is, how do you decouple that tradition of kind of masking the importance of tying spiritual transformation with social transformation? How do you do that if, in fact, you have adopted certain theologies that really don't fit your experience? Now, I'm a little more sympathetic to churches that are not as liberal as some of our white mainline liberal churches, because there are particular issues that I think are very important to Black people that cannot be relegated to human sexuality and abortion, which tends to be kind of these points of division that have grouped persons or put persons in these different camps, as opposed to thinking about how can we have conversations, moderating conversations, where we can find some common ground without demonizing the other group. And that's very difficult to do, because we hold our religion very tightly, and anything that kind of disrupts that in some ways upsets our entire theological sensibilities. And yeah. That's kind of my thinking around that.
And on that note, we must end the program, but I thank you so much, Dr. Gilbert, for being with us today and last week as well. Great conversations.
Great. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. My guest today has been Dr. Kenyatta Gilbert, and we've been speaking about the Black prophetic tradition. Please join us again next week here on WGVU.